Okay, welcome back to episode number 11 of Pod on the Parish. This is a really special one. I mean, also, I'm going to check, Hannah, are you a little bit annoyed? It's taken podcast number 11 for you to appear on the podcast. Surely you would have expected higher rankings.
Absolutely, yeah, number one. No, I don't mind at all.
Don't mind at all. So today we will be doing a webinar on accounting basics. You are an absolute pro at account. So, I mean, we do share on the webinar a bit of background, but yeah, what did you do before Scribe?
Yeah, so I've been working for Scribe for 8 years, but before that I worked for Norse, which is a facilities management company that provided services to district or county level councils.
Oh, okay, cool. How long were you working in that job for?
12. I was there for 12 years.
Oh, 12 years. So what happened there? Did redundancy or you quit or...?
So my boss at the time, I went on maternity leave, and as I was on maternity leave, my boss was retiring, and I thought, you know what, I think this is time for me now to move on as well. So I decided, to look for something else. And I was on a holiday in Cyprus, and I had a little look, and this job came up, and I thought, well, that might be something that suits. And there we are. Rest is history.
Sweet. So it was advertised.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I wasn't around back in those days. You and Jane, yeah, you're the longest standing team members at Scribe.
We are indeed.
So I guess at that point in time, what did you know about town and parish local councils?
Very, very little, in fact, actually. So obviously I had fair knowledge of sort of counts generally, but actually all the differences that sit at this level, I knew nothing about at all. So lots of learning in the beginning.
Yeah, I knew nothing at all either. Let's rewind a little bit as well. You know, so was Norse your first job out of uni? Did you go to uni or...?
I did go to uni, so I just went to the UEA and did business management as a more general degree, but with all my sort of specialisms were on the account side, which I found I really liked the best. I did a bit of temping when I first left uni, but nothing sort of major. And then, yeah, I went straight into Norse, and that was me for 12 years.
Cool. So I know you live in Norfolk. I know that. So you're a Norfolk born and bred?
No, I was born in Devon, but we moved here when I was about 9. So from one sort of country bumpkin area to another.
Okay. Where in Devon was that?
North Devon, near Barnstaple.
Oh, near Barnstaple. Okay, cool. Do you remember?
Yeah, bits of it. Yeah, I do.
So you went to uni locally. You didn't want
to... I did. I wasn't very adventurous and just decided to just go up the road to the UEA. But I did live in Norwich, so I did move away from home at least. So
good. That's cool. Right. Yeah. So we all know you quite well in the sector. You're around for 8 years, supporting many Scribe customers. I'm going to ask you this question, which I asked a few guests. Is there anything we don't know about you that might surprise people? Something more on the personal side.
I always struggle with this question because it makes me review my life and think how uninteresting I am. But the only thing I could think of was I do have a hobby that I do very much enjoy fossil hunting on the Yorkshire coast. So I thought,
oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So we go to Yorkshire 2 or 3 times a year and do love a little walk on the beach and see if I can find any ammonites or any jet, which is fossilised monkey puzzle tree, which is, very enjoyable.
So what's your fave item? Have you got it there?
I haven't got it with me right now, but downstairs on my shelf, I have got a fair-sized piece of jet that I found about 5 years ago that I'm very proud of because, jet's quite rare and they make jewellery with it. So from the Victorian times, Queen Victoria was a very big fan of jet, particularly when she was mourning, so it was all that black look and black jewellery. But yeah, I do have a very large piece of jet that I'm very proud of.
Cool. So you can spot number problems and you've got the detail of spotting, walking along, you can spot a...
Indeed, there's something very nice about just being in that zone of being on a beach, walking along, and all you're doing is just looking to see what you can spot. You don't have to think about anything else. You can just be. And it's very nice.
It is. Yeah, it's very mindful, isn't it? I thought you were going to tell me about your empire, your side hustle.
Well, I do like a little bit of Playmobil on the side, but my side hustle of selling Playmobil isn't quite what it was because it's not as popular as it used to be, which saddens me greatly.
Oh, so what was your peak? What was your peak year?
Oh, probably around 4 or 5 years ago. I still do it now, and if I ever see any Playmobil at car boots or charity shops or online, then I will buy it and I will make it up into its little sets and I'll often resell it looking beautiful. And I used to do a lot on eBay, on Facebook, and it was I do still have now, even to this day, sheds full of spare parts of little figures and their hair that tends to pop off quite a lot, and all the little accessories, and so I can make up any set, and I can still probably, if you show me a piece of Playmobil, I may well know which set it comes from.
Really? Oh my God. So you
Yes.
got your so you got like a workshop, Playmobil workshop in
That
Sheffield.
was my dream. I always imagined that one day maybe I'd have a full-on dream, or maybe even set up a huge diorama of Playmobil City of all the different sets of it all going on, and have some sort of wonderful place to go. But yeah, not yet. Maybe in
Oh, so it's all it's dying. It's the
it's not like it used to be. I think.
snap and TikTok have killed your.
Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe actually, now that the social media ban is coming back, is coming in next spring, maybe there'll be a
Oh, yes.
resurgence because all the younger children will have to find something else to do. So maybe it will make a comeback.
Well, you're a finance person, so I've got to ask the numbers. What's your peak? What's your P&L? No.
That's another thing that saddens me, that I never get really kept a really specific listing, but I do have a wonderful bundle that I bought in Holt about 2 years ago for £20, and it included so much stuff, and it was just wonderful. So all the years that I've done it, I've saved up all the money that I've made, and then I either buy sort of my kids' Christmas or birthday presents, or takes us on some days out or something. So yeah, enjoyable little side hustle that isn't quite as productive as it used to be.
Okay, so we're gonna like segue from Playmobil to Agar.
Yes,
Does that work?
absolutely.
Yeah, so what, but you're doing a talk today on like the whole year, really. It's just account basics. So what is a common mistake people make?
I would say this year particularly, I have had a lot of questions around VAT. I think people tend to find VAT scary, and they're not sure what they're doing with it. And a lot of things have cropped up around VAT. So I would say misunderstanding what to do with the VAT, how to claim it, is something that definitely catches people out. And there we go. So as John said, today is a real introductory session. It's real sort of first level of an overview of all the things that I think are useful as a starting point of knowing what's going on in town and parish council accounting, particularly because it's quite different in sort of if you come from a business background, there's lots of things that are different, and it's obviously useful to know. So you're very welcome here if you've been in your councils for a few years, a bit more experience, but this is really about those people who have just started. Maybe you've been through that sort of baptism of fire of doing that first agar, but this is the sort of overview of the whole year, the things to think about with regards to finance. Okay, hopefully you can see all my slides. Let's go. So starting off then, I thought it'd be useful to really bring it back to an introduction to local council accounting simply by defining what a parish town council is. So I've said there, it is an elected body at the first level of local government, makes decisions on behalf of the parish, and has a wide range of powers relating to local matters. So I thought it was important to start with that because then it gives us an overview of the things that we need to consider. So some of those things might be transparency. Of course, the council exists to spend, in essence, public funds coming via the precept to make the parish area as good as possible to do the things it needs to do, and it wants to be transparent about the things that it does. The efficient provision of services. So that precept that you're getting, are you spending it in the most efficient way in terms of tendering contractors, etc., but also thinking about how you want to spend it, because there'll be some things you need to do, but some things that you want to do in terms of projects moving the parish forward as well. Those things are therefore heavily related to the setting of the precept. So that's another important part of the financial year. And we do a whole session on that sort of September, October time, looking at forecasting, budgeting, setting the precept, because that's really, really key. Ultimately, your council funds are in the main going to come from the precept. So you want to ensure that you've got enough to cover things you want and need to do, but equally that you're not taking too much and ending up with a surplus that hasn't got a plan. So that's really, really important. And then alongside that, the management of reserves. So making sure that your council has enough general reserves to facilitate the general day-to-day running of the council, mitigate against any cash flow issues, but also planning ahead. Are we holding reserves for the projects that we want to do, allow us to manage our budget most effectively? And I'll talk about reserves a little bit later on in a little bit more detail. And then more specifically is the role of the RFO, so the Responsible Financial Officer. So as it says there, every local authority is required to appoint an officer to be responsible for the administration of their council's financial affairs, and they should be a paid employee of the council. Now, a lot of the time, that won't be a separate role. If you're a little bit larger, you may have a separate clerk, an RFO, and some other employees of the council, but often you're a single person, a single employee of the council holding both the role of the clerk and the RFO. Alongside that, you might also be doing part-time hours, and there's a lot there, pressure, lot elements of the job role all across every area. So finance is part of it, but there's a lot of other things going on. And as a result, it can often feel quite overwhelming because actually there's a lot to think about, lots of different hats you need to be wearing. But in terms of some of the responsibilities of the RFO, I've just listed a few there. So making sure the council is following the proper financial procedures. So if we think back to the AGAR that you've just been in, since involved in completing, and you think about the annual governance statement, making sure those things are being done correctly, the council's doing their financial, their standing orders and following things appropriately. Having those internal control and audit systems, so the way you manage payments, petty cash, do things appropriately. Reporting to the council on the spending and the current position. So that's obviously really, really important, using the financial data to provide information so the council can make informed decisions and then ultimately going forward in terms of setting the budget and therefore the precept. And of course, at the bottom, we can't not mention the completion of the AGAR for the financial year that runs the 1st of April to the 31st of March. As we said, hopefully everyone's through that period of pain now, and that's been done, but obviously another key part of the financial year for councils and RFOs. So based on all of those things that we need to think about, we can see why financial information is so important, because it allows us to achieve those things we've just talked about. When we're doing that, we also need to be mindful of the accounting approach that we are using to keep our financial records and then ultimately completing the AGAR. So when you've done those accounting statements, you would need to have either used receipts and payments or income and expenditure. So sometimes people come to us at Scribe and we ask which approach they use, and they're either not entirely sure, or they'll confidently answer one and it's actually turned out to be the other. So I think it's useful at this point just to clarify the two different terms. Receipts and payments accounts, a simple form of accounts, and then it records the receipts and payments at the time at which they received or paid. So I always say this is what happened, when it happened, regardless of when it related to. So it's really about recording what's actually taken place. Similar sort of cash accounting. If you come from more of a business sort of financial background, this would be what you'd know as cash accounting. And then income and expenditure. So that considers the period to which the transaction relates to. So thinking about timings rather than simply when they occurred. So this is thinking about making adjustments, debtors, creditors, when did the actual transaction relate to rather than simply when did it take place. So that would have happened and that process would have needed to have been followed depending on the approach that you were using when you complete the AGAR. If you're super new and you weren't involved in the AGAR particularly, and you're not sure about the answer to this question as to which approach you use, if you look back at your accounting statement, so the numbers part of the AGAR, box 7 is your funds carried forward, box 8 is your total bank position. If those two numbers are the same, then you're almost certainly working in receipts and payments. If they are different, then you're definitely in income and expenditure, because the different denotes adjustments that have been added to the numbers there. Okay. But again, we talk a lot more detail about the year end, completing the AGAR, things to consider in a sort of January, February time next year in the preparation for looking ahead. So again, feel free to come along there and we'll talk about that in a lot more detail. In terms of which approach you need to use, if you are under 200,000, so that's gross expenditure, gross income for the financial year, you can work in receipts and payments. If you go over that threshold, you need to work in I&E, but that's only if that's for 3 consecutive years. So be very clear about that. If you happen to go over for 1 year because you had a large grant or some seal money came in and it tipped you over the threshold, if that doesn't continue and you go back underneath again, you can remain in receipts and payments. If you're over 3 consecutive years, you must move to income and expenditure. Having said all that, you still can be under the threshold and opt to use income and expenditure. Tend to see that when clerks or some of the councillors have strong financial backgrounds coming in and prefer to use that approach for their accounts. Do also remember that if you find your council needs to move between approaches, so maybe you're going to go from receipts and payments to income and expenditure for the 26-27 financial year, do remember that you must restate. So if we think back to those accounting statements as part of our AGAR, you'll recall that you have your current year and your prior year, and every time they're displayed together, they must be using the same accounting approach. Again, we do talk about that in a bit more detail, but that's something that you can be aware of now, potentially, once you go over that threshold and you know that's going to need to change. It's something you can work towards. Okay, so that first little bit was really thinking about why do we need good financial information, how are we going to keep that good financial information? And then that takes us to the cash book. So the cash book is the most important accounting record for local councils, and the cash book is simply your spreadsheet, your piece of software, where you log all the transactions, where you're entering the details of what's being paid out, of what's coming in. Okay, so that's the fundamental thing. If you've got that, you've got good information in that cash book, you can then get the financial information out that you need. So when we're thinking about entering details into that, there's some simple sort of pointers, really. Hopefully, it's fairly self-explanatory, but just things to be mindful of. Firstly, just doing it regularly.
Often it can feel overwhelming. So try and do it on a regular basis rather than sort of getting behind and feeling like you've got a lot of data you need to enter. So regularly recording those transactions, making sure you're splitting out the VAT, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Making sure you've got that full audit trail. So you've got supporting documentation in terms of the invoices that support those payments you're making. It's been approved. You've got all those records. We're thinking about VAT. You've got the correct information in terms of making VAT reclaims. Complete those regular bank recs. So ideally on a monthly basis, because that helps confirm that the data that you're entering into your cash book is correct. And as a general sort of thought process, can you produce timely and useful information easily? So if you're putting good information into your cash book, does it then mean that you can get good reporting out? If your council said, can we see budget versus actuals? Can you tell us how much it's costing us to run the village hall? Can you do that easily without lots and lots of work? So it's just some things there at the bottom just to have a think about. Is your accounting system fit for purpose? Do you need training on it? And often we hear about people who don't get any training, as we talked about earlier. I had a lady once who said, I was literally given a carrier bag full of paperwork, and that was the only handover they got in terms of sort of having to sift through and work out what's going on. Does it suit the needs of your council? So, in terms of thinking about the reporting that you want to do, the information that you want to provide, is it set up in such a way that allows you to do that? If it isn't, we're not too far into the financial year. So, is it worth thinking about how you can make changes to improve things? In terms of talking about bank recs, just a little extract there from Scribe in terms of making sure it all reconciles. And as we said, ideally monthly, possibly a bit more regularly if you're particularly big, but at least monthly to make sure that you're keeping on top of those bank recs. So, in terms of thinking about your cash book, the structure that you've got, based on your council budget, your preset breakdown. Most councils who can move over to Scribe will have a lovely budget. They'll have a list of their budget codes with budget amounts against it, all sectioned off accordingly. Often they'll have initially having a corresponding spreadsheet that bears no resemblance to that budget. It'll log the transactions, but it's not allocating them out to budget codes. So trying to do a budget versus actual comparison becomes really, really difficult. So think about that. Make sure you're allocating those transactions out to budget level so that you can easily track the spend against each of them. And group codes together that require reporting on. So I've mentioned the village hall as an example a few times. If you think about the reporting areas that you need, are you grouping them together so you can very easily run reports on it? And in terms of improvements that you can make, do you need additional codes? Maybe you group things together. You've got a code for general admin, but that covers lots and lots of things. So it's useful to split out the phone, subscriptions, printer, whatever it may be, to see more information. Do you have enough information in it? Have you got your supplier's VAT number logged in your cash book? Do you record the invoice number? So if a supplier phones up and says, have you paid this invoice? You can very easily check things without having to sift through lots and lots of paperwork. So there's a little example again of thinking about budget versus actual reports. I've sectioned it off accordingly so that I can report on the things that are interest to my council. They want to understand those things. So think about that structure in there. So, as a summary, thinking about the cash book, really it's about doing it little and often, regularly, keeping on top of things. Bank recs are key because they help you confirm the data that you've got. And if you are doing things alone, think about those Facebook groups and getting support. Even if you just want to go on and have a rant, have had a really bad day, you'll get lots and lots of people who probably have been there, feel the same, and can offer support. The last slide in the section today has lots of links of useful resources, so I'll share that with you at the end. Okay, so that takes us into VAT. So, as I mentioned at the start, VAT has been a real biggie for the rest of this year. I've had lots and lots of queries about that. I think partly because as soon as somebody mentions that, everyone feels a little bit nervous, a little bit trepidation around it, and making sure things are being done correctly. So, in the main, you will either be, as a council, VAT registered or not VAT registered. Now, this is going to be a bit of an overview of that. There are some additional considerations, some other caveats that I haven't got time to go into today. But if you think your council potentially has a complicated VAT position, I would strongly suggest that you take specialist VAT advice. Okay. But starting off then, so non-VAT registered councils, that will be councils who don't have any VATable income that warrants them requiring to be VAT registered. So likely just the precept and maybe some other bits and bobs going on. And they're not VAT registered, but they can claim back VAT that they're incurring on their purchases. And that's using Form 126 on the HMRC website. So you can log on with your government gateway ID and credentials and then submit a claim. If you haven't done one for a while, you may need to initially do it via post, but you can certainly then get the ball rolling. So unlike being VAT registered, there are no specific timing for claims, but you must claim for complete calendar months. So you can decide to do them today. You'd need to go, say, to the end of June. Equally, if you're a smaller council and your claim is less than £100, you can only claim annually, so you must claim for full year as well. Claims can be made going back 4 years, so it's worth looking into if you've inherited a position where your VAT claims are not up to date. And again, this is something that we do get quite often. People start in a new role and can't see any VAT claims recently, and trawling back through to find out when it was last done, is there some VAT that's unclaimed? Obviously, there's a trade-off there between the amount of work involved in collating all that information versus what you're going to get back, but certainly worth a look if it looks like the VAT reclaims are behind or out of date. I'd recommend at least annually claiming and to the 31st of March as well. Again, some people find that counterintuitive, thinking, right, I've got a whole year end I need to deal with. I can't be thinking about VAT reclaims as well. But actually, doing all of that process at the same time allows you to check the VAT position. Software will manage a VAT position for you. Scribe will show you the amount of VAT that expecting you to claim, so you can check against it to make sure you haven't missed anything. But it's useful to have a structure there. So you might claim annually, quarterly, 6 monthly. But if you do that regularly, then if you do leave and someone else comes in, they should therefore be able to pick up fairly easily where you left off and see the structure of what you've been doing. And there's an extract again just from Scribe that you can run off. If you put all the transactions and all the information, this is what you then use to reclaim the VAT for that time period as well. So useful. And that's why we're talking about thinking about putting that data in, making sure that you're recording invoice details, invoice date, the supplier and their VAT number, so you've got that information to hand and you haven't then got to go back through and trawl through paperwork to find the missing information. So you might be at a council that is VAT registered, and that will be because you'll have an additional source of income besides the precept that is VAT-able. So things like running a car park, having a cafe or a bar. So basically thinking about if you're providing service that has income that would be VAT-able in a normal circumstance, some therefore would potentially need to be VAT registered. It's different again to a non-business scenario where it has a VAT threshold of 90K. For a council, you have to become VAT registered as soon as you start having a VAT-able income. HMRC won't enforce that until you're achieving £1,000 of output tax, so VAT on that income in a financial year, because that then guards against sort of ad hoc one-off items that potentially might not be repeated. It's not worth going through the process of being VAT registered for sort of one-off items. But once you start having a regular source of income that achieves and £1,000 of VAT or would achieve it, you should become VAT registered at that point. That would then mean you need to submit VAT returns. So there will be a structure to that, a timing structure. Most of the time it's quarterly. I have seen a few though that I have to do it on a monthly basis. If you do find yourself needing to become VAT registered, I'd strongly suggest that you try and work it so that your VAT quarters end at the end of the financial year, so i.e. the 31st of March, because it does then add an unnecessary level of complication if it straddles the financial year. And now you will need to submit those VAT returns via software using Making Tax Digital. So originally it was a paper exercise of filling in a form and sending it off. Making Tax Digital was brought in a few years ago, with the idea that it would make things that bit easier, increase accuracy, and then obviously the records and then the submission is done to HMRC. So that's a consideration if you again think you might need to become VAT registered. So, of course, to facilitate all of what we just talked about, you will must ensure you record that VAT separately on your cash book so you can see that VAT element and that you've got your VAT details of your VAT number of your suppliers. Remember as well that you must have that invoice. So, thinking about that audit trail, we're thinking about having an invoice that's made out to the council that clearly shows the VAT being charged, the VAT number of the supplier. Slight sort of way around it, if you're thinking about things where you might buy stuff from supermarkets where you wouldn't have a formal invoice, that's absolutely fine, but you would just need to make sure that you've got the receipt that's got their details on it and you can see the starred items that have got VAT on it. But in the main, if you're able to achieve an invoice, you would need to have one and make sure you've got that paperwork to support it. Sort of as a general theme of this, if you're thinking actually that's been a really long, difficult process to achieve my VAT reclaim or get collate all the data, think about how can I improve it going forward? How can I make that easier for me? And as I said, always specialist advice if you have a complicated VAT position. As I've just talked about, it's sort of a general overview. There are some additional things about business activities, non-business activities, the impact of exempt supply, things like that, that I'm not going to get into. But if anything's sort of happening, large projects, big building works, lots of VAT, do consider whether there might be an implication around that. Okay, so I just want to next section then today think about some other important financial information to give consideration to within the financial year that then is important sort of feeding into other parts. The first bit is the asset register. So the asset register is a record of the council's tangible assets. Initially, a key feature is thinking about in terms of finance supporting the information for box 9 on the accounting statements. So when you completed your AGAR and your accounting statements, you would have had to give a total value of your assets in box 9. So anybody from Wales, apologies, I believe it's box 12 in Wales, but box 9 in England. You'll also want that asset register as a record of your assets for insurance purposes to make sure that you've got the appropriate level of insurance based on the assets that you've got in your area. And it also allows you to manage your assets. So where are they? Useful to not just log, if you've got five benches, log them separately so that you can record where they are rather than just as a lump entry in your asset register. Think about the maintenance of them. Do we need to go around and do checks, etc.? And also thinking about renewals so that you can manage. And then when we think about the setting of the precept and budgets and reserves, have we got provision there for thinking about when we're going to need to replace those assets as well? So that's really, really important. We don't suddenly want a great shock one year when we think actually next year we've got to replace loads of assets and we haven't got any provision, any reserves for that, and we're going to suddenly have to put the precept up to allow us to do those things. So that's really important. Also worth mentioning as well that we have an additional app called Civically that allows a really comprehensive management of assets as well, sort of beyond just the financial elements of it as well. And also worth being aware that currently there are no specific rules for councils, there are specific rules for councils, sorry, such as no depreciation. That's something that we do get asked about occasionally, when particularly when people, as I said, have come from a strong financial background where they're used to having assets and items being depreciated. In the council terms here, it is the asset is purchased, it goes onto the asset register, and it remains there until it is disposed of. There is no depreciation. Having said all that, though, there's some work being done at the moment in terms of improving the practitioner's guide and some of the sort of rules and how things are done on the AGOR, etc. There hopefully is going to be some improvements to the section on the asset register because it isn't particularly specific about how cost the value should be recorded. It sort of allows the council to make up their own decision. So hopefully there'll be some key pointers there about how the asset register should be maintained for the financial aspects there as well. So just thinking about the key information, at the very least, you want the date of acquisition. When did you buy the asset? When were you gifted the asset? The cost of it, so how much did it cost to buy? But if it was a gifted asset or it's a community asset, it's a proxy pound value. So thinking about things that you want to record as part of your remit, but there's actually no resale value, things like a village pond, it's in your area, but you're not going to sell it to anybody. Where it is, the location, so if anyone wants to go and look at it, maintain it, check it, you know exactly where it is, and its useful life. And that's really, really key, as we've said, in terms of budgeting, so that we can make revisions. If something's going to last 10 years, are we thinking ahead about making sure that we've got the funds to allow us to then replace it? Obviously, you want to keep it updated for additions or disposals and add missing or other useful information. So in potentially what we might call a little lull, but probably not if the summer, this is the sort of thing that you might want to kind of give some consideration to. Again, we do hear very often from people come in and said, look, no one's looked at this asset register for years. I've literally taken it and I've gone and walked around my village, my town, and actually physically had to check whether these assets still exist because it's so out of date. So that's a consideration as well. And then reserves, that's really, really important. And as I said, I wanted to talk a little bit more about reserves. So, as it says there, essential that councils have adequate reserves to cover both their day-to-day financial obligations as well as future projects. You're all probably very aware of larger sort of district county level councils that have basically sort of run out of money, real issues of not having enough reserves to cover what they need to do, what they want to do. So that's really important, making sure you have the correct level of reserves, and they should be reviewed and justified at least annually. So again, as part of that precept budget setting process, you would want to be checking the reserves, what we want to do, have we got enough, etc. But anything or any sort of projects are going on, any spend, I would expect reserves to be reviewed as part of your monthly meeting, budget versus actuals, to give some overview just to make sure that you're maintaining them and appropriate level. So firstly, you've got your general reserves. So that's there how to cover unexpected events, cash flow problems. Should be equivalent of between 3 to 12 months expenditure. So if you're smaller, you might have more like a whole year's worth of expenditure sitting in a reserve. If you're larger, it's going to be more like 3 months because obviously that's quite considerable and less likely to have an impact because you're larger. So that would be sort of upper limit of where you're looking at. You wouldn't just expect to have a sort of general reserve with no real plan of much higher than this. You'd want it to have to be sitting as an earmarked or a capital reserve, but this is to cover things. Of course, it will fluctuate because if you think at the start of the financial year in April, you'll receive your first tranche of the precept, so it'll be healthy, then you'll spend against it. Then in September, if that's when you receive the second tranche, again, there'll be some fluctuation. So it's thinking about that, but making sure as a baseline, it's where you want to be. Then you've got your earmarked reserve. So that's for things for specific purposes, projects. So if you want to do one of projects, you want to improve something, you want to install a play park or do some work, etc., that would be your earmarked reserves in there, but also specific purposes. So I've mentioned a few times thinking about asset renewals. So you may have a reserve for asset renewals that you top up year on year. And then every 5 or every 10 years, whenever it may be that you need to renew that asset, you have enough money in the pot to spend, and then you start replenishing it again. That then very nicely saves you against budget fluctuations in terms of flatlining the budget without any sort of unexpected peaks and troughs as to the spending. Anything that isn't an annual cost, therefore, is consideration as to whether you want to have it in reserves. Equally, things like elections. Do you want to hold something so that you've got that provision if an election is called? It won't be annually, but it sits there if you need it. And then you've got capital reserves, so capital purposes, fixed assets, enhancement, etc., repayments of loans. And do remember that if you do sell an asset and you'll dispose and you get more than 10k, it must sit in a capital reserve so that it can be spent in that manner as well. There is no upper limit for earmarked or capital reserves as well, so be aware of that. As I talked about sort of holding a general reserve with no real plan or purpose, that is not appropriate. You will be questioned on that. If your reserves are particularly high, you would have to answer why your funds are more than double your precept at the end of the financial year. But if you have reasoning, understanding, they're sitting in earmarked reserves, maybe you're planning for a really large project, that's absolutely fine. They just need to be justifiable. You need to demonstrate that you have an understanding, there's a plan in place. It's not just money sitting in the bank with no clear directions to what will happen with it. Okay, so that's taken me through my little whistle stop tour of some financial things to consider here. I wanted to end today with a list of helpful resources because it can feel overwhelming. And equally, as I said earlier as well, if you're on your own, so there's lots and lots of links on this last slide as to some helpful places to look. So the practitioner's guide, which is all about the agar, useful tips in there as well. The internal auditor is a good person to refer to. The external auditor, you can't go and ask some specific questions, but their websites are really useful in terms of what needs to be completed for the end of the year. So hopefully you won't have to think about that for a while now, but that's something to consider. There's a VAT link there, so not particularly the most exciting reading I can recommend to you, but worth having a look at because the VAT is so different to sort of regular VAT rules. And then, of course, you've got SLCC now, your local council associations that hopefully you're members of because it's really good to have that resource to refer to. And then finally, the Facebook group if you just want to go and ask a question, have a rant, get some like-minded people to support you, then that's a good place to look as well. Okay, that's me, my whistle stop tour of financial things to
Awesome. Thank you very much, Hannah. That's really good. So we are available, Hannah's available to take questions now. While you get your questions ready, I'm going to ask my colleague India just to give a quick overview of Scribe accounts. Some of you will not be familiar with it. Just give you a quick overview of it. India, how are you doing?
Thank you so much, and great to see so much love for Hannah in the chat. Keep that coming as well. I saw a lot of that at the beginning. So some of you may already be using Scribe. It may be that you're potentially considering adding on one of our additional packages. Maybe you're now responsible for a venue, an allotment, or a cemetery. We're on hand to help with those. But for those of us that may not be using software at all or using a software other than Scribe Accounts, let's have a quick dive in together. So our package is fully cloud-based at standard. You can access it from anywhere and on any device. We don't have caps on bank accounts, users. You can have different specific permission levels, so read-only access for your auditor as well. In terms of navigation, everything we need is always in this left-hand side menu. And it can be customized to suit you and your council. So whether you're VAT registered or not, you can do both your VAT 126 production on the Scribe system or your VAT 100 production. If you are VAT registered, we do have a full integration with the Making Tax Digital portal. So you can make your submission through Scribe too. When it comes to year end, again, whether you're working in receipts and payments or income and expenditure, Scribe is fit for purpose to help you. So we will be putting together your section two of your agar on the Scribe system for you, with built-in checks and balances. So if something has gone slightly awry at that all-important time, Scribe will tell you straight away. So as well as your VAT and your agar, you can also do one-click report generation. So when you're preparing maybe your monthly report pack to take to council, all of your checking in on the budget reports are available in one click. So whether you report monthly, quarterly, or a different frequency, Scribe's reports will be there ready for you to get ready for that meeting. That's an example of our monthly report for this instance. So you've got the variance on the right-hand side, as well as your budgeted amounts and your actuals. Lastly, you can also do your bank reconciliation on Scribe and create that report. And you'll also have an asset register built in within the system. So that will be ready for you, again, to feed into your agar. If you are interested in learning more, please do drop a little note in the chat and then I'll reach out to you. I'm also going to share a link in there as well, in case you have time after the session and want to learn more. But thank you so much.
Excellent. Another good session, Hannah. You've done many of them now. You do different ones throughout the year. This one's the account basics. As I said, it's the whole year. You do a year-end session through January to March, and then you do your budgeting one, don't you? I think your biggest ever sign-ups was like 400, which always freaks you out, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Yes. I always can't believe that many people want to come and listen to me
Yeah,
talk.
you people don't know about this. You're very good at actually public speaking, but you absolutely hate it.
It's better. I wouldn't say I'm still on absolute hate level. It has mellowed a little bit over the years, but I'm sort of in slightly uncomfortable stage now.
Slightly uncomfortable. Good. So, based on today's topic, what's one thing you would like them to take away to remember?
I would say that actually all the sort of financial information they need to provide comes from having a good cash book. So a good record of their transactions that they keep up to date regularly and is accurate is actually the basis of everything. So do that and everything should fall into place.
Get your foundation sorted.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to go back now to learn a bit more about yourself. First, I want to tell, yeah, so we spoke about you before the webinar about your career path. Tell me about 18-year-old Hannah. What was she thinking? What was she doing? Yeah, what was her was she happy, sad? What was she up to?
Was fairly happy, but yeah, I was about to go to university, and as we said, I didn't venture too far away because I've always been a bit of a homebody. I do like the simple things in life and staying at home. But yeah, I said I was probably a bit of an overthinker as a child, probably still a bit of an overthinker now. So that would be sort of my main piece of advice if I looked back, is as one of my teachers said to me as I was leaving primary to go to high school, they said to me, "Don't worry, be happy." And I think that's an important thing. And obviously, sometimes it's just not possible. Things are do get on top of you, but generally, try not to overthink things. Don't sweat the small stuff, and try and just, yeah, be happy.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I mean, the listeners wouldn't have heard because we cut out for the podcast a lot of the actual attendees speaking, and that lady who was dropped into like March, knowing nothing about clerking or anything, and she had to do year end for the council, and yeah, she gave some good, similar advice really. She was super stressed, but year end, it's not the end of the world. You can still put a positive spin on it. No one's going to die if you get it wrong.
Yeah, I thought that was a good comment, really. You can only do what you can do, can't you? And you can't control everything. So there we go.
How would you tell that person then? You'd walk up, where would they be? How would you give your 18-year-old self that advice?
Oh, I wouldn't probably talk to anybody when I was 18. I'd just sat in the corner quietly, but
Yeah, okay. Right. So we've got the pay it forward question. You've got to leave a question for the next speaker. You've got to answer the question from the previous speaker. I've got yours here. I've already warned you of it, and actually lines up quite nicely, I think, with your hobby. We'll see what you say. So if you were going to bury treasure, what would you bury and where would you bury it? And this has to be a proper treasure. It cannot be something personal or sentimental. This question is from Tom Clay, Chief Exec at Herne Liquor County Association.
Yeah, so when he first gave me that question, I was slightly suspicious of Tom wanting to know about my treasure and where I was going to keep it, and I wasn't sure if I should answer that question. But thinking about it, I thought, what is my treasure? So I would probably say it is my late grandmother's jewellery and gold sovereigns that she left me, that are very precious to me, and I look at them and think of her. And I think I'd be very boring and probably just hide them somewhere in my garden. But I do think that I would leave either a very elaborate treasure map or possibly cryptic clues in order for them to be found. So.
Okay, so yeah, you'd leave. Oh, that's awesome. Where do you live so that we can all start digging up your garden?
Yeah, I can't get anything too specific. North Norfolk is all I'm going to give you.
Oh, so that's the first clue.
Yeah, so I've got to narrow it down from there. I've got to think these clues through before I give anything too much away.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Excellent. So do you have a question for the next person?
I do. And my question would be, if you could go back in time and attend any event as an invisible bystander, where would you go? What would you see?
That is an awesome one. I've got one. I normally attempt to answer them,
Yeah.
because there's so many bands that you wish you saw.
Yes, this came about because I would really have loved to have been at Live Aid and seen Freddie Mercury. And that was my initial reaction, is that was my first
That
thought.
would,
I would love to have seen that.
yeah, mine's going to be very local. It's going to be Dereham,
Okay.
because I think it's true. I don't know if it's a myth, but Jimi Hendrix played in Dereham.
Wow, okay, I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
so I would be in Dereham, Jimi Hendrix, Dereham. Let's just see if it's on Google. Yeah, the Tavern Club. Yeah, he played there. I don't know what date it is. Yeah, October 7th, 1967, Dereham's Hollywood Cinema now stands. He played there at the Wellington Club. Yeah, so that's where I'm going to be.
Very nice.
Awesome question. Love it. Anyway, yeah, really enjoyed this. We obviously work together every day, but it's actually nice to have a little chat, get to know your own colleague, actually. So it's been quite
Yeah,
good.
definitely.
Awesome, Hannah. Anyway, see you at the next meeting.
Indeed, you will. Thanks,
Cheers.
John. Bye.
Bye.